Welcome to The Fighting Priests, a podcast exploring orthodoxy and jiu-jitsu, two paths, one struggle. Father Ted Paraskevopoulos and Father Thomas Sandberg are two orthodox Christian priests who also happen to be practitioners of jiu-jitsu. Together, they explore how these two unique worlds intersect and what it means for our spirituality. Here's Father Ted and Father Thomas. Well, welcome everybody again to The Fighting Priests. I am one of your hosts, Father Ted Paraskevopoulos, here in Toronto. And with me is my co-host, Father Thomas Sandberg, up in Niverville, Manitoba. Father Thomas, welcome.
Good morning.
Well, as usual, the one sentence answer from Father Thomas. How are you doing? Okay. And with us today, in our 12th episode today, is a very special guest, and actually something different. Again, in the last episode, we actually interviewed our first female Orthodox mom, and that was a first for us. And today we have another first. We are interviewing Father Ryan Halford, who is a Roman Catholic priest based out of Louisiana. So he's our first non-Orthodox guest, and also he is our first non-Orthodox clergy, and he's also a BJJ practitioner. And I came across Father Ryan on YouTube, watching a really, really nice video interviewing him about jiu-jitsu as well, kind of the same topic. And he was very, very kind enough to respond and to come on our show. So I do welcome him. Father Ryan, welcome to The Fighting Priests.
Hello, thank you for having me, and I look forward to the interview.
Wonderful. So we were just speaking with Father Thomas, you know, up here in Canada. You know, by the time this airs, which will be probably near the end of the summer, even though we're recording it now in July, you know, we've had this long lockdown, and we keep talking about it. I don't know, it's just the default thing we talk about. And here in Canada, things are opening up. Father Thomas is already training in Manitoba, which is nice. Here in Toronto, not so much, unfortunately. We're still in our what is called here phase two, so we're not gyms are not open yet, and we can't roll, we can't have contact, things like that. So how are things down in Louisiana, Father?
Likewise, we are in extended phase two as well. Our gyms, some of our gyms are opened, and so people kind of go at their own risk. I don't know if they're wearing masks or not as required, but I like to think that they are, and it'd be really ridiculous to watch them roll. But yeah, I unfortunately haven't gone back because just as a priest, I know if I'm out for 14 days and just the nature of the ministry, some of the people I minister to being more vulnerable, I just, and right now in good conscience, can't bring myself to the gym, although I am sad not to be there. And I'm feeling it in terms of my, my health, my overall, endurance has definitely taken a hit. I may have gained a few pounds too, so it's gonna be fun to hit the gym once again and kind of get back into where I want to be
in that the corona pounds, right? Like everybody's a little bit rounder, I think, after the lockdown. Well, except Father Thomas, he seems to be getting thinner. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just running and working out. I go to the beach. Everything I do when it's hot, right? Like I cut the grass when it's hot, so I'm always sweating everything out, I guess. I don't know.
And you're also out in the middle of the prairie, so it's like there's not much people around, so you can do anything you want, really, right?
Pretty much.
Without a mask. Yeah, I don't know. In the gyms down there in Louisiana, Father, do you know, are they allowed to roll, or are they only allowed to do kind of like drilling and things like that in their own little boxes, like spaced out?
I'm not sure what they're allowed to do. I know what they are doing. Are rolling. But I guess.
Well.
But I do think they're trying to limit the number of partners they roll with in terms of, I think there are some measures there. But there's a certain sense if you think you're sick and stay home. And Obviously that's only so effective. But.
Sure. Yeah. I know our club here in Toronto, it's going to be opening. By the time this episode airs, it's going to be open for a while. So hopefully it'll be back normal by this time. But as of now, it's going to be opening, I think, next week. But there won't be any rolling, unfortunately. Everything is partisan off into little squares, like on the mats. Yeah. And there'll be live classes, but it will be just basically drilling. There'll be dummies. They'll have sparring dummies, especially for the little junior kids as well. My kids are in the junior programs. And it's going to be – so it won't be great, but it'll be better than staying home. Yeah. Or doing Zoom classes, which is what my gym does, just for technique, you know, just repeating a technique. So we'll see what happens. I got the itch as well. You know, I got to go back. It's been 4 months. So.
All right, Father Ryan, thanks for being here. It's really interesting to have, it'll be really interesting to hear your perspective. So why don't you tell me and tell our audience first about how you became a Catholic priest. Were you a Catholic your whole life?
So I was born in Slidell, Louisiana, which is about an hour and a half where I live now. So a different diocese. But I was baptized as a child, and my parents kind of went off and on. And by the time I got to high school, even junior high, they had stopped really going to church. So I had actually left the church, the Catholic church, for a little while, dabbled with some different Protestant groups and church services. I learned to love God and scripture through those avenues. So very thankful and eternally grateful for that. And so I actually went through a period of being anti-Catholic, as it were. But through the course of high school, but my junior year, really became convicted of the Catholic Church through reading scripture and the church fathers and those things. And so came into the Catholic Church. And from there, I went to seminary after my freshman year in college and didn't really know much about it because I didn't really grow up with some of the culture and traditions and practices as my other seminarians, fellow seminarians did. But it was kind of a culture shock. Like, I didn't know we'd be praying five times a day. I didn't know we'd be going to mass every day. I thought maybe that would be like a once or twice a week kind of thing. Learned a lot about the church and the priesthood. And then I left with the intention of never returning. And, you know, went out, had a few relationships, started working, became a high school teacher. In the course of that, became my sister's legal guardian. And by the time she graduated her first year out of college, I, you know, went back to seminary. And I've now been a priest for 3 years. So just finished my third year of priesthood May 27th of this year.
So what age were you ordained at?
33.
33. Is there like an age requirement in the Catholic Church for being a deacon and being a priest? Like in the Orthodox Church, mm-hmm. I think it's, what is it, 25 for being a deacon, 30 for being a priest, and then for a bishop, whatever. Is there something like that in the Catholic Church as well?
Yeah, I think you have to be at least 10 before you're a deacon. No, I'm joking. I think it's 20. It's either 25 or 26 or 27, somewhere in there. I mean, I knew the number at some point, but I guess now that's not that relevant to me.
Even in the Orthodox Church, we don't exactly stick to those canons very
well. That's right. Yeah. You make the rules and then you dispense them accordingly.
I was ordained at 26.
Okay.
Old, right? As a priest. Actually, mm-hmm. No, that's not true. I'm sorry. I was ordained as a deacon at 25. And then which is technically canonical, but then I was ordained as a priest at 27. So yeah, earlier. A lot of times when there's a need, this is the case, right? But yeah, generally speaking, you're usually a 30. But 33, you were on your Jesus year, so your crucifixion year.
So what was your journey to the priesthood? How did you discern that calling?
You know, I never thought I would return. I think a part of it was, I kind of came to a point in college where I knew the Lord was calling me to serve, not sure how. Yeah. You know, I kind of came of a mindset, just given the nature of marriage and family, that I didn't want to get married for the wrong reasons. I'd rather remain single for my entire life than, you know, get married for the wrong reasons. And a part of that was my own parents' broken relationship and a lot of the brokenness I see in family. And so I think I was really trying to become content in my singleness, which that in itself is a really difficult thing, I think, to do in high school and going your first year, few years of college. But I came to a point where I was like, yeah, maybe, you know, I know if I become a priest, I could, you know, I'd remain celibate, but I also could serve the church. And so let me give that a go. And then, so I learned a lot, but at that certain point, I was like, I don't know if I really want to do this. And so I left on good terms, never regretted it. Even to this day, I'm glad I left. And I needed to learn a lot more about myself. But in the process of teaching high school, I thought I was going to be a university professor, but I wanted to go back and teach high school for a few years because I wanted to serve. And I like education. I like, basically pouring myself out into youth ministry and things like that. And so for a while, I thought that's kind of going to be my focus. And as I was teaching and not making much money, but also becoming my sister's legal guardian, my life plans became very simplified. I know I'm going to spend the rest of my life serving the church, really investing myself into relationships and forming people. And I wanted to basically serve the Lord, grow in my ability to be faithful and die. Like, that was my life plan. And in the process of that, I met a lot of really awesome families, had some really great friendships, and that really felt compelled and invited once again to consider the priesthood. And so I went on a pilgrimage to Santiago, Camino de Santiago in Spain, did a little walking pilgrimage there the last few hundred miles. And during that time, just reflecting on the graces of that, I really felt the Lord calling me to trust him more. And in that process, really discerned a calling to the priesthood and went back to seminary within 2 years of that. Like I said, I had to wait for my sister, who I was responsible for the time, to get out of high school and have, you know, at least some transition outside of that.
Oh, that's a beautiful story. And how have you found the first 3 years of your priesthood to be?
It's been wonderful. I mean, I really believe that as a priest, we have a unique role of bearing, you know, the divine meaning of life in terms of the family of the church. I'm a very firm believer that everything about the church can and ought to be understood in the context of family. And so as spiritual fathers, right, our desire to be fathers is not diminished, but elevated in a unique way in terms of the family of the church. And so, you know, even when I get to spend time with people, you know, with baptisms and weddings, doing the, you know, confirmation celebrations, being there for funerals, being there for when people are sick on their deathbed, whenever people come to receive confession, I believe as a priest, we have a unique role in being able to enter into those moments of people's lives, those ups and those downs, the joys and the sorrows, and really bear forth the meaning of God's grace and God's healing presence and really just his desire to love his children. And so I really enjoy that about the sacramental life and how we get to participate in the family of the church in a very unique way.
Yeah, I think that I'm a really new priest and I don't have a parish yet, but I'm already seeing that myself, the way people approach you and the way you interact with families. And I'm already seeing how important and how, I don't know how precious that role is. It's very special, and it's unique to the priesthood. I think it's really important. So, at what point did you get into Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu? Before you were a priest, or after you were a priest?
I had wrestled in high school and really enjoyed it. Placed in state my sophomore to my senior year. Actually, I had a few wrestling scholarships offered to me, but I decided not to pursue that because I was kind of burned out.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed grappling. My freshman year in college, before I went to seminary the first time, I did, you know, some MMA training. I did a few fights in at the time in these bars where you just sign a waiver, you show up, and you know, that was back in 2002.
Amateur?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But I mean, I wasn't an amateur fighter. I just showed up. Yeah. They're like, hey, you show up, you sign this waiver, get in the ring and go at it. Like, you know, and you can either box or, you know, do some form of grappling or MMA. And so I wasn't proficient or anything at all. I mean, I was mostly just going out there doing my wrestling moves, which has certain advantages and disadvantages, as you know, training. But for a while, when I went to seminary, didn't really train at all. I would go help out at local wrestling clubs. And then whenever I taught, I would, you know, be assistant coach for the wrestling team and work out with them. But by and large, as I was preparing to the priesthood, I really allowed my health to get away from me. At a certain point, I was weighing, you know, 340 pounds, and I got diagnosed with diabetes, and I started changing my diet. I've lost over 100 pounds, but I was like, there's something I need to do something active to engage, have an appropriate amount of leisure and exercise. And I've always enjoyed grappling. Something that kept me from the gym and from doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was a certain perception of the MMA community. And even when I was doing that kind of cutthroat, like I just want to hurt someone. Yeah. And so I was really cognizant of wanting to find a gym that really nourished the community, that nourished the art of it. And that wasn't. And so while I still think those types of mentalities exist within certain pockets, I was really blessed to have a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu community that was really just there to help each other improve. And there's a certain sense of us being in this together, which I really appreciate. And so, so going in, you know, of course I went in just trying to do my wrestling moves, which, you know, helped. I had good pressure, but there's, you know, I was being choked out a lot, and that was a fun transition as well. And I really enjoyed the art of it. You know, I enjoy it. It's like playing chess with your body, and there's just something. I hate working out. I hate running. You know, you talk about running.
Oh yeah.
I can run if I'm preparing for something else, you know? So I was running pretty consistently whenever I was doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu and training for tournaments. But now that all the tournaments are canceled, I can't, it's harder. And now that I'm not able to train as much, it's harder to get the motive, you know, just out of my own laziness to go run.
I understand that. People say that to me all the time when they ask me about like how fast I run, like time-wise. I'm like, I don't run for time. I don't love running enough. I run. So even when I do it, I have to have certain music or I'm, if I'm not in the wilderness, when I go running, when I'm camping, it's beautiful, it's different. But when you're like wherever you live and you're running, you got to find the motivation to run. I'm not.
Yeah, I agree. I used to not like running when I used to do it, you know, with the mentality that everybody says, you know, you got to go fast. You try to like, you know, keep track of your time and things like that. But then it's like now during the lockdown, the quarantine and everything, I've actually been running a lot. And I've actually lost weight, which is great. Awesome. And I was like you, Father Ryan. It's like when I started jiu-jitsu back in November. So, you know, how many, I don't even know how many months that is right now. Maybe 8-9 months. I weighed 350 pounds.
Nice.
And I'm taller than you. Like I'm 6'4", but still that's a lot. Right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Now I'm down to 303. So, you know, and it's all been running and of course diet and training, but especially the last 4 months, there's no jiu-jitsu. Right. So what are you going to do? You're going to run. But I'm running like an old man. Like I don't run fast. I run almost as slow as speed walking, right? Because you got to protect your knees, right? Because in jiu-jitsu, you need your knees, right? And if you're running really hard, you're going to hurt your knees and you're going to wear them out, especially when you're heavy like us, right? And you're not going to be able to do, you know, you're not going to be able to train when you go back to the mat. So it's more just the enjoyment, like slowing things down and enjoying nature and just kind of like, yeah, I did 5K yesterday. It took me like almost an hour. It's like really slow, yeah. Right? Really slow, but it was really enjoyable. You know, you run through the forest, you run, Father Thomas has to run through like the prairies, which I know because I used to live there. My first parish was in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and it's not a fun place to run because you just see the same thing for like miles and miles and miles, right?
The clouds can be nice when it's hot outside.
The clouds can be nice.
All right, Father Ryan. So, what are you? What rank are you? Are you blue belt or white belt?
Oh, blue belt. Yes.
Blue belt. Okay. So you've obviously. I think I've seen you competed before.
Yeah. So that tournament that you watched was in June of last year.
Okay.
So almost a year ago, and that was International Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu Federation did their first tournament in New Orleans. So that was that tournament. So it was good because they're going to plan on coming back every year now. So we have one of their tournaments local. But yeah, that was their first one. And I got my blue belt right after that tournament. But yeah, I won all my matches there, both the open as well as my weight. And yeah, that was a fun time.
Was that your only tournament you've competed in? Or have you done others?
No, that was my fourth one. Okay. I went out that because having a wrestling background, I've always enjoyed tournaments. I know there's a good to that. And, you know, I've always done well in that tournament mentality of like, how do you conserve your energy? So that's something I do have as a background. And so going in, knowing I wouldn't do well, but there's just a good putting yourself out there. I did my first tournament after just a month of doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, the next tournament.
Yeah.
And so I did pretty much five tournaments my first year. I was gearing up to do some this summer, and I wanted to do Masters World and a few things. I was going to be, at the end of this month, I was actually going to Brazil to train. Right. I was excited about that. Yeah. I was going to get down to 205 and try to, but that's where I'm going to have to readjust some of those goals, as it were.
All right, Father Ryan, how would you say that Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu complements your ministry as a priest and also your spirituality as a Catholic Christian yourself personally?
Mm-hmm. I think there's a number of ways that probably manifests itself. One is, you know, just personally, there's something good about discipline, right? I mean, when you read the Desert Fathers and, you know, a lot of the spiritual life begins with self-knowledge and humility and understanding our limitations and our need for God and making room for God in our lives. And You know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is very humbling when you're out there on the mat and you're trying to learn how to use your body. You know, this body that I've had for my entire life, and you know, you're trying to unlock its mobility, its skill set. You know, and so there's a great humility in that learning process. There's a lot of discipline that goes, which is, you know, obviously extremely important in the spiritual life. There's a lot of humility in terms of recognizing personal weakness and being resilient and overcoming failure and being okay with that, right? That you put yourself out there. And so in ministry, likewise, we always want to have strength to serve the people that the Lord has entrusted to us. You know, this needs to be built upon the discipline of our own spiritual practices and our ability to say no to pleasure so that we're free to say yes to love, that we have that freedom. You know, so just as we want to have that physical and mental freedom in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to move and know the moves and kind of learn them, that we want to have that mental, physical, and spiritual freedom in our ministry to be able to respond to the Spirit and lead where God is taking us. I think also in a sense that when you go into the gym, you meet people from all walks of life with all different types of ideology and so forth. And so it becomes a microcosm of society, of our world that we live in, and the people that the Lord loves. You know, these are the people who long to see your face. And so there's a certain sense of being able to, sometimes our ministry can be a bubble where we're only seeing or experiencing a certain type of people. And obviously there's a lot of diversity within that, but even with people who maybe agree with the teachings of the Orthodox faith or agree with the teachings of the Catholic faith. And, you know, obviously we're called to minister to more than that. And so I really also love the fact that I'm able to build friendships and camaraderies and common ground with people who, you know, may not agree with the church and even the least bit, but I get to be a sign of, you know, of communion, a sign of God reaching out. And just by treating people with respect and dignity and really caring about them and being invested in their lives as well, it also introduces me to a bunch of people that otherwise I wouldn't encounter. So I think there's a good there as well.
I think, yeah, that's a very important insight that I discovered myself too, right? Being in the Greek Orthodox Church, but not being Greek, right? You can see if you are Greek, you know, we're a liturgically heavy church. We have a full cycle. Like, so you can find yourself in that bubble, right? And if you don't go outside of it, or if you just do soccer, because, you know, a lot of Greeks like soccer. So once you go out of those things where you're not going to find as many Greek people, you're going to find a whole different area of people to expose, whether the church to or Christian or another way of looking at Christianity if they're not Orthodox, right? I find a lot of people when I train, there are a lot of Jewish people, some Protestants. And so in that way, you get to meet people, like you were saying, and you can be a witness of Christ to them, and hopefully in a positive way.
Yeah. And it's important for all of us to love people who don't necessarily agree with us, right? Yeah. I mean, there's just something about our priestly heart, you know, that because, I mean, that's what God does. He draws a people who are foreign to himself, you know, and offers himself. And so I think there's something beautiful to that of just a basic virtue of friendship that we're called to exercise as well.
And Father, you may not know it, but you know, speaking about ministry, today's episode is called The Gentle Art, which we know is a loose translation of jujitsu in Japanese. And, you know, we were talking about ministry and jujitsu, and, you know, your talk that I saw on YouTube actually inspired this title and also inspired a couple of episodes ago, which we did a whole episode dedicated to Blessed Are the Meek, and a few of the Beatitudes, because you touched on it, and I thought that was just a wonderful take on the Beatitudes and how they relate to the life in jiu-jitsu and how they interact with one another. And, you know, we're talking about ministry today, and one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, you know, how do you understand and how does it affect your perception of power? Because, you know, the reality is that all three of us are priests, right? And in our parishes, we are placed in a position of power. It's not our power. It's more, I would revise my statement and say that it's not so much power, but more so authority. It's authority is given to us by the church, by Christ, to carry out the ministry. But we are in a position, you know, where we influence other people and people look to us. And that is a great, great responsibility. And I find that what you were saying earlier about how jiu-jitsu teaches you discipline, but it also teaches you restraint. And I want, maybe you could expand a little more on that, and how do you find that jiu-jitsu has helped you in your approach to ministry, and especially in kind of using that power that is given to you for good, and perhaps sometimes not using it, depending on, you know, your discernment of the situation.
I think that's exactly right, is that when we talk about hierarchy, and I mean in the terms of order, right? We have to order our lives properly in order to be holy. And so, yeah, power is meant to be ordered towards love, right? Authority is meant to be ordered towards love. And we see this within the Trinity, right? The divine persons are all ordered towards a community of relationship. And so I think the same is true, is that when we think about our spiritual lives, the power that we, by which we serve, by which we exercise our authority, if it's not used towards love, if it's used towards selfishness, our own ends, St. Augustine, I know there's some contention about St. Augustine and sometimes between Western and Eastern circles, but I think this is a point that we're in agreement, is that really a sin is a disordering of our will, right? It's an improper ordering of the power by which we do something. And so virtue, which means power, right? It's ordering our will towards the good. And so I think this is so true on the mat, is that you're trying to learn how to use a proportionate amount of power in order to exercise the move, right? You don't want to use too much and be excessive. We don't want to be too little and not be able to get it done. But this certain sense of balance that's so important in the spiritual lives. And so as priests, we are ordered towards the good of the people, right? And this is something I like to expound upon, because something that we know by virtue of our theology is that who's a priest? Where the reality is every baptized person is a priest, right? That's the common priesthood, where everyone is baptized priest, prophet, and king, and
yeah,
shares
the royal priesthood. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so our ministerial priesthood is really ordered. It exists for the sake of serving the royal priesthood. It exists for the sake of serving the common priesthood. And so I'm ordained, I am ordered towards the good of the people, towards the good of the church. And so that's why my priesthood exists. Their priesthood doesn't exist for my sake. Their priesthood exists for the sake of bringing the gospel to all the nations, of sanctifying the world, right? That's the role of the people of God's church. And so then when we ordain, we have a power to confect the Eucharist, or, you know, to participate, to bring forth the sacraments in order to serve the people, so that the people can take the grace they receive and they go out and sanctify the world. They are the light of the world. They are the salt of the earth. And so our positions as priests is that our power is never meant for the sake of ourselves. It's always meant for the sake of loving the people, feeding them Christ. Or as I like to say, I consecrate the Eucharist so that the laity could go out and consecrate the world and exercise their priesthood. And so I think that's so true. Power is not meant for selfishness. Power is given and authority is given in order to serve. And so this is related to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because, you know, as we talk about, you know, the gentle art, there's a certain sense of, if you know how to do something, if you know how to defend yourself, if you are strong enough to do what you're called to do, then your responsibility is that I need to proportionally defend myself. You know, whenever I need to defuse a situation, I don't want to make it worse. You know, I don't want to use less power, but I want to use just the proper amount of force, or the proper amount of energy, or the proper amount of movement, that I can keep a balance not only within myself, but also in the situation and the interaction. And so I think there's that certain sense built into it, is how do we live the balanced life in terms of ministry? How do we make sure we're not distorting power by using our priesthood to serve our own interest, but rather we see ourselves as a servant of the people?
Yeah, that's great, Father. And, you know, two things that come to mind when we were saying those words. One is, A, we like Augustine. He's one of our saints as well. And I know you're right that sometimes, you know, in the Eastern circles, he's not read often. But I find that in modern times, there's a little bit of more of a, not a rehabilitation, but a resurgence of reading St. Augustine, even in the East. And I agree with you, like what you said about the idea of, you know, conforming our will and our power and the gifts that God has given us, our charismat, as we say, the charisms, to the will of God and also to the service of the people. You know, another word that came to mind was what we say in Greek, the Greek word for sin is amartia, and amartya basically means missing the mark, right? So if you're playing darts, right, you want to hit the bullseye. The bullseye is God, you know, and just like playing darts, the further away you hit from the bullseye, the less points you get. And really, that's how we approach, like in confession, that's how we approach mm-hmm. this kind of emphasis on the medicinal healing aspect, which is very, very prevalent in Orthodox theology when it comes to confession and repentance, that you're always trying to, you know, train your will, your free will, to be in line and to be conformed to the will of God, which is very hard because it requires humility. And so you're always trying to do that. Jiu-jitsu, I find, really helps because the humility that you acquire there, like you said, on the mats, is something that puts things into perspective. The second thought that I had was, is that, and you were saying that you need to be able to know exactly how much power or ability you need to use in every specific situation. And I would say that it's very much because we use a lot of medicinal terms in the Orthodox Church. You know, the church is the hospital, the priest mm-hmm. is the spiritual doctor, he diagnoses, he doesn't punish, he doesn't, you know, judge. We don't have really a kind of punitive approach to it. At least that language is not so much, not as prevalent. So I would say that it's like doing surgery, like from a mm-hmm. spiritual point of view. You need a scalpel, you don't need a hammer. Yeah. And that's very much what jiu-jitsu for me reminds me of, that, you know, when you're in a fight, let's say you're battling an opponent, whether it's in a competition or whether it's in real life, somebody's threatening you. I need a scalpel. I need to know exactly what technique to use to be able to subdue the opponent at the appropriate time without hurting them, without doing more damage, just like a surgeon is going to go specifically to the place that they need to go to fix what they need to do without hurting other organs or making the disease or the ailment worse. And that's a very, very good skill to have in life.
You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, we read in Genesis and you read the line of Cain, right? And you get this certain sense of this excessiveness, right? And it talks about Lamech. And he mentions, like, I have killed a man for wounding me, right? A young man for bruising me, right? And there's that certain sense. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech, me, I'm avenged 77 times, right? So it's this illusion of excessive force. If someone punches me, right? If you insult me, I'm going to punch you, and right? And if you punch me, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to break your arm, right? And so this is what we see. The way of the world is these escalating cycles of violence, right? And so then how does Jesus come and show a different way? He basically says, like, look, if someone, like, how many times should we forgive? Well, 70 times seven, right? As excessively vengeful as Lamech is, that's how excessively merciful our Lord is. And so there's that sense of proportionality, is that if we want to overcome the violence and the evil of the world, we can't play a game where we engage in violence and evil. Rather, there has to be a proportionate response of love, proportionate response of mercy that invites us into a different way. And so then I'm not trying to hurt you more than you're hurting me. I'm just trying to neutralize the situation. I'm trying to find a better way where we could be, we could have the opportunity of showing forth a different response. And if you're strong and you know you're strong and you know you could defend yourself, there should be a certain sense of responsibility of, like, I don't have to hurt you. I can protect myself without hurting you. And if I'm going to take seriously your dignity and the fact that you are created in the image of God, then, you know, why would I want to unnecessarily hurt you when I can protect myself without doing that?
Thank you for that, Father. That's, you know, I really like your insights. You know, all of us being clergy, I think we can all identify with it. And I think even our listeners, and most of them being lay people, whether they be Catholics or Orthodox or Protestants or non-religious, because I know everybody, all different types, listen to this particular podcast, I think they can identify with that, because everybody can identify with people with authority over them. It doesn't have to be clergy. It can be professors. It can be, you know, first responders. It can be a government. Anybody, right? And I think everybody can take away the exact same message, right? That if you have been blessed with, you know, authority that has been given to you, And I prefer the word authority over power because, you know, authority is usually something that's given to you that you wield in a way to for the good of others, whereas power, you know, it kind of almost
either way. Yeah.
Yeah. It implies, you know, force, you know, you're forcing someone, you're trying to bend somebody to your will. Right. You know, it's, I think everybody can, those who are wielding such authority and exercising such authority, and also those who are under such authority, if the goal is the good of the other and the love of the other, yeah, then both benefit. It's not a power struggle between the one who is in authority and the one who's under authority. You know, just like in our parishes, if the priest is loving, if he's a good shepherd, if he's willing to give his life up for the sheep, as Christ says in the Gospel of John, then the sheep will love the shepherd. They will not resent the shepherd. They will not be afraid of the shepherd. They will not think if I do something wrong, the shepherd's going to kill me or punish me. Just like some people have this kind of idea of God, you know, he's going to come after you, he's going to smite you. But rather it's this loving relationship where I appreciate and I'm grateful for the shepherd because the shepherd is going to take care of me and the shepherd is going to give up everything for me. And the other way around, of course, the shepherd is proud and is willing to give his life up because he loves the sheep and he loves those around him. So I don't know what your, both Father Thomas, Father Ryan, maybe your final thoughts on this. Those are my final thoughts, my kind of, you know, what I'm kind of taking from this. And you guys can tell me what you think.
My final thoughts, I just feel really inspired by everything Father Ryan said, and I can't wait to listen to this episode back again to hear it again. That's all it for me. Father Ryan?
Do we exercise our authority in a way that makes it easier for the people around us to be good? Right? I think that's one of the things that, you know, even as being a good teammate, am I being a teammate in such a way that when we practice jiu-jitsu together, I'm helping you get better? I'm not just trying to dominate or punish you, but really I want what's good for you. And I think that's what makes for a really good teammate. But I think this is true of society is, you know, when you think about civil servants, right, our political leaders, you think about the people that we elect and we give authority over us so that they can serve us, right? That's so that they can serve us. Same in the Old Testament. Why do they put forth a king? The king was meant to be the first servant of the people. But how often does that power become distorted when we use our positions rather than serving others to be served? And so I think this is just really everyone's responsibility is how do we discern what gifts the Lord has given us? And how do we make sure that we're not using those gifts just for ourselves, but in order to will the good of the other? And in doing so, we make it easier for them to act out our vocation, our mission to love others as Christ has loved us. And so, you know, I think really that is, do we exercise our authority in a way that makes it easier for the people around us to be good?
Very well said. And on that note, I think our time is up here on our podcast. And I really appreciate your words, Father. This is like, this has been a wonderful, wonderful experience talking with you today. I know Father Thomas has appreciated it. And I know that our listeners are going to appreciate it. And we hope that maybe in the future, we'll have you back, maybe on another episode and another topic.
This was very enjoyable. I think what you two guys are doing is great for our church or for our society. And you're bringing together two of my favorite passions, which is Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, as well as just a love for the faith. And you know, as the priesthood that we share, of being mindful of how we're called to take seriously our role and our authority. And so I really appreciate what you're doing. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
You have been listening to The Fighting Priests, an independent podcast. Please follow us on Facebook and Instagram and let us know your thoughts. We'd love to hear from you. Till next time, keep training the body and the soul. God bless.